Hello, friends. Have you noticed how much podcasts have grown in popularity over the past few years? We definitely have, and it's insane. We have an opportunity for your business to take advantage of the exponential growth of our podcast by advertising with us. We've been riding the podcast growth wave for a few years now, and we want you to take advantage of this too. We have unbeatable pricing and advertising packages, and we work with you on an individual basis to produce the most effective ad possible for our audience. If you would like to advertise with Forbidden Knowledge News, email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. We look forward to all our new partnerships. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Robert Homrich. First, a couple of announcements. If you have a business and you want to advertise with us, email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. We are doing incredible productions for our affiliates, and we work with you on an individual basis to create the most effective ads possible. Check out our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. It's also the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. You're going to find some of your favorite podcasts from our community. Forbidden Knowledge News is always available on Rockfin, Odyssey, Rumble, and all podcast platforms. Rockfin is where you get our premium content, but you also get all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin for only $10 a month. You can also create a free account and get access to everyone's free content, including all our regular shows. Just go to rockfin.com/FKN+ or click that link in the description to sign up. Today, I want to welcome back to the show Robert Homrich. He is author of the book, The Vitruvian Code, The Secret Anatomy of Washington, D.C., and its connections to the ancient mysteries, as well as creator of the podcast Stranger Than Fiction, which focuses on the occult and conspiracy theories, as well as Epic Proportions Media on YouTube. Robert, welcome back. How you doing?
Hey, Chris. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
always
man.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Yes, it's been a while, and it's always a great conversation. We seem to be marching closer to the world that many, like yourself, have warned about for a long time. And in your previous appearances, you've given a fascinating presentation about the secret symbolism in Washington, D.C. You also have a book about that. I highly recommend the audience going back and watching that on the video platforms that we're on. It's very informative. And I know today, among other things, we're going to discuss the Guidestones. We're going to get into a little bit of what could be behind some of the recent events with those. We all know that due to unusual circumstances like it blowing up, we don't have them around anymore. As I also want to get your insights into the cult implications of these events of late and how they have profound effects on the collective and where we're being driven. But it's been a while since you've been on. Could you remind the audience just a little about yourself and what led you down your path of research?
Well, I think you pretty well covered it. I'm best known for my book, The Vitruvian Code. It's available on Amazon for anyone that's interested. It's about the design of Washington, D.C. I feel I've added a few essential pieces of the puzzle that were missing for a very long time. My discovery of that just led me on my path to where I am today and delved very deep down the rabbit hole. So that's it in a nutshell, I'd say. I have a pretty big fascination with, conspiracy theory stuff, the esoteric things, occult, all that good stuff.
Right. So. And you're one of those that have been talking about a lot of the events that we've been seeing unfold in as of lately that are kind of pushing us into this one world government direction. And we're seeing it unfold right before our eyes. Did you think when we first started seeing a lot of the big push for these events after 2020, that they would be unfolding in the manner that they did? In some ways, it seems like it's happening fast. In some ways, it seems like it's a slow crawl, but it's all headed towards that same direction right off that cliff. Did you see this happening the way it did?
Honestly, nothing surprises me anymore. I hate to say it, I'm not surprised by any of what I'm seeing. I mean, I've kind of been kind of given foresight on these things that are coming, and here they are. Well, that foresight takes all the element of surprise away, and unfortunately, so I'm just the messenger sitting on my soapbox trying to warn the world. And some people take what I say to heart, and a good majority of the people just ignore me and dismiss me. It turns out a lot of things I've been saying all along, you know, are true. And I'm not the only one. I mean, you go on social media and it's like you see these memes, you know, I need new conspiracy theories. All the ones I had came true. Or, you know, conspiracy theorists aren't called conspiracy theorists anymore. They're called psychics, or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing surprises me.
Yeah, I know, man. There has been so much that has kind of come to fruition that so-called conspiracy theorists and even well-known researchers that have been talking about this stuff for a long time, and it seems to be unfolding in a way that's almost prophetic. And one of these things that's kind of been intertwined into this is the Georgia Guidestones, because, of course, before it was destroyed, it had the statements to keep humanity under 500 million, and a couple of other things that sounded kind of nefarious along those lines. And it's become a major staple in conspiracy culture. There's mystery behind who even commissioned the build of the Guidestones. So let's start there. What do you know about the Georgia Guidestones?
Well, it's funny because When I got the news of what had happened, I was in the middle of a extended hiatus from social media. But when that happened, it was just too much, too good for me to just pass up. So I kind of came out of my little hiatus because there was a couple things I wanted to point out. But when I first heard about it, obviously they hadn't released any video whatsoever. And I've been to the Georgia Guidestone personally. As soon as the message, the word got out, a thought popped in my head that, you know, probably escaped a lot of people, and at least initially, and that was the simple fact that there's videos. I mean, it's under constant video surveillance, and so I had to get online, take a break from my hiatus, and get online and point out, you know, the Georgia Guidestones under constant video surveillance, just like Epstein was. And that's how I worded it, just like Epstein, because it's funny how, you know, things like this always seem to slip behind beside the camera, however you want to put it. But so I had to jump online to, you know, make that point. But it's not just one camera. You know, don't be mistaken by what you're seeing in the media. There's multiple cameras on that monument. And even with that statement that I made, you know, it's under constant surveillance, just like Epstein was, I still think that my statement there escaped a lot of people. So I actually went back and kind of wanted to, you know, clarify and, you know, expound on that a little bit to say that my point was, you know, not only is it under constant surveillance, I mean, if somebody attached an explosive to that monument, they got him on video.
Yeah.
And so... Of course, this I was making these statements before the video came out, and you talk about foresight. Well, lo and behold, shortly after I made that statement, almost like the FBI is watching my Facebook or something. But yeah, they came out with video, and they're showing the explosion. Well, you can actually look, and there's actually you'll see that there's multiple cameras, because there's multiple camera angles of the explosion. So there's no doubt there's multiple cameras. But then I came out And I'm gonna say it here too. I'm gonna make a bold prediction right now to say that nobody's ever gonna be caught for this.
Of course.
And
not.
I said it on social media as well. Nobody's gonna be caught for the simple reason they don't want to catch them. And that was one of my points I was making. They don't want to catch them, and you got to ask why. And of course, we could speculate, but the point is they don't want to catch them. And I think the proof is in the pudding, and the fact that, you know, first they released one angle and then they released another. But when I saw that they released that, I'm like, well, okay, why aren't they releasing video of the person planting it? Well, it's almost like I said, the FBI is watching my Facebook or something, because as soon as I said that, next thing you know, they'd come out with video showing. And of course, it's a very poor video.
Yeah.
Guys way in the distance, you can't really make out anything. But again, there's multiple cameras. There's one on each side of that monument. So the camera you're looking at is the far camera, of course, the one that you can't make out the detail, where I suspect if you look at it from the other angle, one of the other, and I think there might be even multiple, more than two, but there's at least two cameras. I can assure you of that. And you can verify this by just looking at the videos online. You'll see it's from two angles. But of course, they only show you the one video that's far and distant and hazy. So why is that? And then, you know, what really feels it for me is the fact that, you know, it's almost reminiscent of 9/11, or when they allegedly captured bin Laden. You know, get rid of the evidence real quick. So they tear down the monument. Why did they tear that down so quick? But isn't that a crime scene? Shouldn't they preserve the crime scene? But no, they tear it down. So if you ask me, the real vandals, the real criminals are the people who, the city themselves, who tore that down. And I think maybe the reason that could be, maybe is because they're trying to cover it up.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why we don't get that closer camera angle. Maybe that's why they were so quick to get rid of everything. Kind of like 9/11. Get rid of the evidence real quick, kind of like when they captured bin Laden. Before anybody can scrutinize what we're presenting to them, let's get rid of that body. Give it a burial at sea.
Well, yeah, well, let's speculate about it, because that's all we really can do, because you're absolutely correct. I doubt they're ever going to have any arrests done or any further investigations into this, so all we can really do is speculate about it on this point. And there's a lot of speculation online as to the reasons that this could have been done and why. And I want to get your thoughts as to, if this was kind of like an inside job, why blow up the Georgia Guidestones? What is the, is there some sort of symbolism behind this? What do you think about that?
Well, I could speculate all day long on that, really. And I've pondered this quite a bit. And, you know, a couple things. For one, first of all, we got to point out, what's her name, the woman running for office who's determined to, you know, tear it down if elected. You know, she made that statement publicly right before it did end up. So that kind of does raise some red flags. I don't know if there's anything connected. I don't even care to speculate on that one, honestly. But what I will speculate on is, perhaps, maybe this is a message. Maybe this is a message in the classic esoteric occult way that they like to send their messages, that we're entering a new phase in the plan. Or maybe perhaps the old plan is outdated and we're entering a new phase. You know, there's a lot of things that we could speculate on that as well. Or perhaps, you know, on another hand, maybe, I mean, let's face it, it's not the first time the Guidestones have come under attack. Maybe this is the most effective, but I mean, it's been vandalized before. It's obviously a very controversial monument, to say the least. And, you know, but on the bright side, it did bring a lot of tourism to the city of Elberton, or the town, I guess, of Elberton. You can barely even call it a town. So there's not really a whole lot going on there besides the granite industry. But it was a huge tourist attraction. And being as controversial as it was, you got to wonder, you know, not all that tourism is going to be the most kind or considerate of tourism, I guess. So maybe the town just got sick of all the controversy. Who knows? I mean, we could speculate a number of things, but I mean, it's a possibility that maybe the town didn't like the negative light that it got painted in because of that monument. And so they decided to get rid of it. Or maybe they didn't like the people that it was bringing in to the town. Maybe that's a possibility. So I think these are all viable reasons behind it. But again, it's all speculation. And that's really, like you said, that's really all we can do. What do you think?
I don't know, man. It's crazy because we had that occur. The explosion looks very strange to me. I've watched it a few times. It doesn't look like just your typical, a normal bomb that they put on there. I don't even see a source of where the explosion came from. Based on the camera angle, it's horrible too. Like you said, they should have had other camera angles to go off of. But besides that, a couple of days later, didn't they have this obelisk in, I think it was Spain or France or somewhere in a different country, that gets struck by lightning? And it was also a headline, which I find kind of synchronistic, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think it was either the same day or it was the very next day that happened.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because there are a lot of people claiming that the Guidestone itself was struck by lightning. And
right.
So that, I think it's by now everybody realized that's not the case, but it's funny because a lot of people were like, and this is one of the things that annoyed me. There's a lot of people like claiming this as some sort of victory or like God's striking it down and it's a victory.
Yeah.
And, but in reality, the fact is, even now that it's gone, it's not gone because it's preserved in documents. It's preserved in videos. I mean, it's a part of our history. And that's not something that's going to go away. And it's certainly destroying a rock does not necessarily destroy the objective that's inscribed upon it, nor does it destroy the people who are dedicated to propelling that objective. So I don't know why so many people are claiming this as a victory. What it really is just, destruction of evidence.
Yeah, man. And I think most of the things that we see on the mainstream media, which is on the television or on your phones now, ultimately. I mean, people in small villages across the planet who have no access to TV or smartphones or anything don't even know what the Guidestones are and have no idea that they got destroyed. So it's not even a part of their reality. It's not even a part of their existence. So this stuff is pumped into our reality, and we've come to learn how much of this stuff is staged, is scripted, and has been staged and scripted for a long time, probably since the dawning of Hollywood and the media, that we've been basically spoon-fed our reality through the television and through social media. And what would make this event different from any others? And while we're talking about staged events and spoon-fed reality, you wanted to talk a little about the January 6th insurrection. And oh man, talk about spoon-fed fakery, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm really trying. I can't grasp that one at all. The New York Times put out a video. I don't know if you saw this video. It's like a 40-minute long video, and they took all sorts of different angles of this event, and they went into detail and did their computer diagrams showing the layout and how things unfolded. And it's a very in-depth. It's actually a pretty good documentary, except for the part where they're spoon-feeding you a narrative. But what's interesting, if you watch that video, they point out, and this is what really boggles my mind, the fact is they had less than 100 police officers on duty at the Capitol on January 6th. This, of course, comes after multiple credible threats were made. Now, less than 100 cops, it seems a little bit suspect, especially when you consider that at a typical rally in Washington, D.C., or a protest, inauguration, what have you, they'll literally have thousands or even tens of thousands of law enforcement on duty. But on this particular day, they chose to have less than 100 law enforcement officers. I find that incredibly suspicious. It's almost like they were kind of like trying to tempt people. And then, the other thing I can't wrap my head around is how does an insurrection occur, and how do people trespass on the Capitol building? And there's a video that shows the police literally removing the gates and inviting people inside. And that's what boggles me about the New York Times videos, is with all the video they analyzed and all the video they included, and not once did they include any of that video, but that video does exist. And well, it's there for anybody that looks it up.
We know that the FBI was involved as a certain percentage of the people performing the insurrection. So this was highly manipulated even on the inside stage of it. Right. And we've, you know, the QAnon shaman, this guy has been involved in plenty of ops, probably deep CIA or, you know, CIA contracted. Right.
Right. Well, I find it ironic that they're even calling it an insurrection. But what I find even more ironic is, how was this nation founded? By insurrection. So if they want to know what a real insurrection looks like, you need to look at the founders. Right. That's a real insurrection. You know, there's guns involved. There's, you know, granted that on January 6th, it wasn't a very friendly atmosphere, but insurrections are typically a little bit more violent than, you know, people going in to take selfies of themselves in Congress.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. So, they're ushering them in.
Right. They literally did. They invited them in. And there's video to show it. So that, how they can get away with even calling it, an insurrection. And they're literally sending, you know, 80-year-old women with breast cancer to prison for this.
Yeah,
for,
man,
walking in their own building. It's not their building. It's our building.
Right.
Who are they to tell us we're not allowed to go in our building?
Yeah, so you're exactly right.
But I'm really boggled by that one. You know, it's almost like they're trying, they wanted to stage an insurrection. I hate using that word. They wanted to stage an event. Let's just call it an event.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want? Let's call it a exhibition. That's mm-hmm. a better word. So they staged it to the American people that don't try to have an insurrection because it'll fail, because look at our staged event. It failed. I really feel like that was the whole purpose of that event, and that's why they staged it, was to send a message that you, and Biden even said, you know, you can't attack the government. You need nukes. You need F-14s to attack. He said it on record. That's the only way you're ever going to attack our nation, which, you know, that's, they're feeding us a narrative. They're trying to convince us that we're not capable, and in fact, we are. All that takes is numbers.
Well, so, I mean, I want to
I really feel like...
Go ahead.
Well, I just really feel like that was the purpose behind that whole, you know, scenario, the whole narrative of that exhibition, mm-hmm. I hate to call it.
They have, yeah, and I think they have, it's like an onion. There's layers of agendas on top of agendas. One of them is, of course, the division agenda. We're seeing, we're starting to inch ever closer to a new selection season in a couple of years here. And, of course, we're gonna see more of this pendulum swing, I believe. We're going to see a pendulum swing to the right in a big way, but this is in no way better than the pendulum swing to the left. Both sides, I believe, are controlled. Even if they're different factions, they're both fighting for control over humanity. But I think that's what we're going to start to see.
If I can interrupt, I think that's where you're wrong. I don't think they're fighting at all. I think it's like just like an exhibition. Like, for example, in wrestling, it's called an exhibition for that reason. They're not really fighting. They're creating the illusion of being at odds with each other, but they're actually working together. And, you know, wrestling takes place in an arena, and it's called the political arena for a reason. I mean, there's a lot of parallels between professional wrestling and politics. And
well, I've actually been talking with my guests about this lately, and I want to get your take. The pyramid structure that most in, you know, the conspiracy community believe that we're in, that there's a top-down structure, and everything, like we're talking about now, is indeed a show controlled by the ones at the top. But there are some that speculate there are different, just as evil factions, you know, this Babylonian death cult and like this Fourth Reich kind of Nazi-ish cult that are both at the top, both very powerful, and both kind of pulling humanity's strings to gain control. And yes, they come together for like Davos and Bilderberg and maybe do some weird butt stuff together. But other than that, you know, they may be fighting for control. But I'm still open. You know, I am agnostic to where it, is it a pyramid or is it different factions or something completely different? I don't know.
It's all, I think you're right, but I think it's all of the above. I think that's the real answer. Without a doubt, there has to be some disagreement at the top. I mean, not definitely at the very top, there's very few people there to disagree with. But just below that level, there's got to be different perspectives and different agendas at play and, you know, different directions that one group wants to take it versus another. And I'm sure there is a little bit of dissension in the ranks there. Undoubtedly, I mean, it has to be. I mean, you can only put so many people in one room before certain people are going to, you know, form groups and disagree with each other. I mean, that's just an inevitability. So I think you're right, and I think it's all of the above.
Are you ready to live a more free, healthy, and abundant life? Transform your yard into a food forest and create a system for self-reliance that's easy and enjoyable with our friends at Food Forest Abundance. No matter where you're starting from, you can become more self-reliant. And you can take your self-reliance to the next level by becoming a producer of your own food through growing and foraging, and learn how to turn your property into an income-producing source of economic self-reliance. They can help you get off-grid and learn what systems to employ for food, water, and energy self-reliance, and live abundantly and in full connection with your property and what you produce. Click the link in the description to get started with your very own food forest and have your own sustainable source of livelihood and become self-sufficient with Food Forest Abundance. Just click the link in the description to get started with your very own food forest today.
No, and as I was saying, with the pendulum swing to the right, we're seeing something else creep back into our collective conscious and social media and the internet. It's QAnon. QAnon is back with some more disinformation mixed in with some factual information to possibly confuse humanity even more. Now, with this kind of, I believe we're going to, you know, see this pendulum swing back to the right, whether it's controlled or whatever, we're going to see this further division amongst people. And this will kind of show us who is still indoctrinated after all the truth they've been shown after the, you know, past couple of years, after everything that has been thrown at them, if they're still, you know, masking up and obeying and jabbing up and supporting Ukraine and the latest thing, is when we're going to see this major kind of division amongst society, and that's when things may get really ugly. I think that's when we're going to start seeing the real tension among the illusion of the sides. Right?
I'm sorry. Does QAnon still have any credibility at all?
I don't think so, but I know that they're trying.
Did they borrow it from Tom Hanks? Oh, that's I can't believe that. If people are going to believe that, but I'm still trying to figure out why aren't people asking these questions? Why aren't people asking questions of where's the other video surveillance of the Georgia Guidestones? Why aren't people asking, you know, you had to have multiple images of that car. Why can't you show us one with the license plate? Going back to that, and I'll get back, we can get back to the other stuff, but going back to that, mm-hmm. I feel like there was a delay. And, you know, I joke that, you know, the FBI is watching my page and all that, but in reality, they probably are, but I don't think that has anything to do with why there was such a delayed reaction to release the video and then to later release the video of the actual perpetrator. I really feel like there's a delayed reaction because they have to go back and check their work and make sure they don't leave any real clues for us to follow. And so, you know, I really feel like that they're because, let's face it, they've been really sloppy in recent years. And, you know, why aren't people asking these questions, though, is what I don't understand. Why aren't people asking, well, how do you have an insurrection when the cops are literally inviting people in? You know, they're removing the gates and the barricades and literally waving people to come on in. And for the most part, that's the calmest insurrection I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you see video of people casually walking through the hallways right next to the police officers. Why aren't people asking the question of why, in the face of credible threats, multiple credible threats, were there only 100 police officers assigned to the Capitol on Insurrection Day? And I think the reason that people don't want to answer that is because they don't want to face the answer. And the answer is we're under attack. Our nation is under attack in every way. And what's the first most primary strategy of warfare? You cut off the supply chains. Now, are we seeing anything that might resemble that in modern society anywhere, maybe?
Everywhere.
Anybody?
They're intentionally destroying the food processing plants. They're creating a further illusion of scarcity with everything that's occurring with fuel and fertilizer farming.
Exactly. That's one of the first, most fundamental, basic strategies of warfare when you go to war with somebody. Cut off their supply chains. And we're seeing that. We're seeing an attack on our nation at every level, everywhere. And I mean, think back to like even the guy that got murdered by the cops, the big one, George Floyd. Mm-hmm. Think back to that and the riots that caused all that. If you go back, you can actually pinpoint what's initially set it off. And it turns out that you know, a guy smashing windows at AutoZone. And doing a little investigation, it turns out that guy just happened to be a St. Paul police officer. Go figure, right?
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, now that's all been swept under the rug. Nobody's asking that question anymore either. We need to start asking more questions. We need to start getting more critical and asking more critical questions, because that's how we really defeat this whole agenda, is by simply pointing at the elephant in the room that nobody wants to point at, because we're all afraid to face the reality that, yes, indeed, there can't be any doubt our nation is under attack. And who's doing it? It's our elected officials. It's our government that's doing it.
Have you ever seen those videos about how they make fast food commercials where they're using like dry ice and like fake patties, and they're painting the beef and the burger, and they using the, you know, the most beautiful pieces, and not, most of it's fake anyway. There's no way you can eat the shit that they're putting here in front of the camera, and they're getting the perfect camera angle and they're showing you, and then you get it in reality and it just looks like a big turd on a bun. That's every time you look on the TV. That's every time you look anything produced on social media, anything produced on a mass scale by them, they, those in Hollywood. It's all a fast food commercial on a large scale. And I highly encourage everybody. There's a bunch of YouTube videos that show how fast food commercials are made. Go watch that and apply that to everything else you see on TV and everything else you see on social media. Have you ever seen those videos?
Absolutely. They're called food artists, and it's not just limited to commercials. Do some research on tomatoes. You find out they're not in season, and they literally color your tomatoes red because they're not in season. They literally color them red.
Jesus.
Not just in the commercials, in the stuff you buy at the restaurant, you know. I mean, so yeah, it's all fabricated, everything. And of course, there's the gatekeepers. Everything you see, even on social media, is locked down. It wasn't always. And that's what really gave us the edge and got so many people to start to wake up. But then they realized people are waking up. We need to crack down on this. And so now we have what George Orwell called the thought police. We call them fact checkers now. And so even the internet, even the social media, even that's on lockdown. So it's all infiltrated. And if you think you can't get your message out, take it from me. I've got a very important message I've been trying to spread for the past 10 years. And, you know, I've made some milestones, but not anywhere near what I feel it should have reached. And that's because there are these gatekeepers.
Well,
and they're doing a heck of a job. And so many people think we're actually winning. And that's what gets me. It's like, you know, the Guidestones, it's a victory. No, it's not. It's not a victory. It's the opposite. But it's exactly the response they want you to give. is to believe we're actually winning. Mm. We're not winning. Our food plants are going up. We've lost 100 food plants since the pandemic began. Now, in 2019, there were 2 food plants that went up. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've just lost our 100th food processing plant.
And no one bats an eye.
Yep.
No one cares.
What's it going to take?
Yeah, exactly, well, man. And your social media now that you're talking about how it's censoring everybody. Well, that's even controlled on a larger nefarious level by AI algorithms. They are the algorithms are now in control of who's getting censored and how it's happening and how a lot of this stuff is actually unfolding. And that makes it even more terrifying that it's kind of in control of these agendas.
That's an illusion as well. It's not the algorithm. That's an illusion as well. It's not really the algorithms controlling it. It's the people who design the algorithm. Yeah, at the end of the day, create all the robots you want. It's really the person programming these robots. There's always a person behind it. It's not like AI has really fully become sentient. I mean, they talked about how it actually did, but it's not like it's in a position where it can control these algorithms by itself. Someone's programming it, and it's programming it to think for itself. But at the end of the day, there's still a person behind the algorithm every single time. So don't be fooled by that illusion either, because it always comes back to the people with the agenda. It's not the algorithm itself that's doing this.
Well, I've had a lot of conversations about the desired outcome that these them, they, those want us to head into, and the transhuman agenda always comes up. But it's also this kind of technocratic control grid society where you're under the social credit kind of magnifying glass, and you have no freedoms. You're stuck in smart cities in these little one-room box apartments where you're plugged into the metaverse all day, and they basically siphon you as a battery. Is this the same future that you see them trying to kind of accomplish here?
Sure, and I'm not the first one. I mean, that's exactly what I've been saying all along, but I mean, I got to give credit where credit's due. It's really George Orwell's reality come to life.
Yeah.
It's George Orwell. It's 1984. There's no two ways about it. We are at that dystopian, and I think a lot of people are really starting to get that, even though they don't want to face the facts. The reality is they're not going to have a choice in a few months now when the whole food processing plant catches up with itself and people are literally, and then hyperinflation, because they're going to, every production facility is going to capitalize on this, but in this prices for food and stuff, the more scarce it becomes, the higher that price is going to skyrocket. And people aren't going to be able to ignore it anymore when it's too late and you can't afford to put food on your table. We're already at the point where we can't afford gas in our cars and we can't afford food and it's just going to get worse and worse. And so the wake-up call is here, whether you're ready to wake up or not. It's here, and you're not going to have a choice. The longer we put off dealing with it, the worse it's going to be. And it's already to the point where a lot of us are not going to make it.
Well, you look at it, you take a step back and you look at how everything has unfolded. Well, the COVID agenda, and then people stopped falling for that. Ukraine, people didn't even give a shit about that. Staged event after, shooting after shooting to try and disarm us. People don't fall for that, but still it's they move forward with different things that will kind of force us into these desired directions. Like these food shortages, like everything else that they're trying to push upon us right now. So I don't think that their agendas are working like they should be. I don't think people are going along with this like they should be, and I think people are seeing through this. I think that we have a good chance to kind of possibly let this fall apart on its own as the way it's going. I mean, we have a fake president who shook hands with nobody the other day, for Christ's sake. Did you see that?
Yeah. That's a sad state of affairs. I would almost feel sorry for him if he wasn't one of the arms of evil. I would almost feel bad for Biden, but because it is a pathetic state of affairs to think that he's allegedly the puppet in charge of the free world. In his hands, what could possibly go wrong? But I think people are not buying into the illusion anymore. But ultimately, I don't think that matters. I think at this point, I think the jig is pretty well up on things like COVID. I think the jig's long been up on things like 9/11. But the irony is, it doesn't matter whether we believe it or not. The history books are still going to repeat the narrative. And when we're gone, our kids are going to believe the history books because it's written in the history books. And that's the way it always has
worked.
Well,
we can see how, like, the COVID didn't work, so they lock us down. It has almost the same effect as COVID as the gas prices right now, because we can't even leave our house because of the gas prices. It's almost having the same effect. So, in effect, it is doing... it's doing what they desired, except they're pushing it to the next level. Next thing is starve us out with food so we eat their bugs and whatever other fake shit they want to shove down our throat, right?
You know, it's a matter of, you know, once you expose the tyranny, all that's left over is the tyranny. There's no more illusion of being a democracy or any of these wonderful fantasies. Once the illusion is killed and all that's left is tyranny, guess what? All that's left is tyranny, and that's what you got to deal with. There's no more illusions, you know. The jig is up. Okay, we don't have to pretend we're a democracy anymore because nobody's buying it anyway, so I guess we'll just show our true colors. That's how it really plays out. That's where it's inevitably going to lead us.
Right on, man. Well, what do you think the objective with the technocracy and the implications that are very apparent with the occult, the symbolisms that you use, the apparent rituals and the factions that are involved, everything that's occurred for hundreds and thousand years has been linked to these ancient ritual practices. If you look at it deep enough, everything leads to the occult at the highest levels. So what do you think this integration is with some of the agendas that we're seeing now?
Well, I think the occult relates to it because ultimately, I believe, and I'm speculating, but they have a pact. They have a pact. You can do whatever you want as long as you inform the public, and you will be free of liability. It's like the warning labels on drugs. You know, you tell me you just went to the pharmacy to get your meds for your tooth. Well, it's the same thing. You get your meds, and it comes with this big list of warnings. If they warn you, it frees up their liability. Mm-hmm. But they have to occult it, so they give you a phone book's worth of information in the warning so that you don't bother to read it because it's too much. And they put it in little fine, tiny print. But at the end of the day, you can't say they didn't warn you because they did. That's where the occult comes in. That's where they put these things in stone, like in the Georgia Guidestones. They warned you, so they're free of liability.
Now,
do you get it?
It does, and I've heard this plenty of times before. It also kind of goes along with the revelation of the method type thing, but
sure.
It seems that these elites, especially when you look at those in Silicon Valley and the tech gurus, they seem to have this desire to engage with whatever exists in a quantum level or in these different dimensions, or maybe even have already engaged with these entities. And that's where we see this technocracy kind of going, is they've maybe been getting this information from somewhere else or communing with something, and they're trying to bring this ideology from this whatever something else is, and it's probably based on ancient ritualistic practices just merged with kind of new, you know, kind of like an alchemical transformation of humanity to this transhuman, right?
Right. Well, when you talk about technocracy, I mean, let's just talk about technology for a minute. Consider 100, 150 years ago, the technology we had and the direction it was going in a very specific direction. And a lot of people probably are, you know, don't pick up on this, but everything was moving towards a mechanical direction. You know, we had, everything was mechanical. We had the steam engine, which paved the way to it. But suddenly, in, you know, between like maybe the 60s and the 80s, all of our technology and all our development took a strange turn that I don't think most people picked up on. And that's everything kind of went quartz-based. Everything went digital. Where did that, I mean, because you think about it, when you start a trajectory, you're going in a specific direction, and it leads to a different direction. But all of a sudden, you take a sharp turn into a completely new direction, which, you know, revolutionized everything. Where did that come from? You know, we could speculate. Is it from some sort of higher power? Is it from perhaps alien technology? Is it an ancient rediscovered technology? But you can't deny that somehow, somewhere along the line, we took this, you know, sharp turn from the mechanical into the digital quartz-based technologies. And I always found that rather peculiar myself. And, you know, what's next? I mean, where did it come from? I mean, where did that, why did we shift all of a sudden? And it is a drastic shift. Can't deny that it is, you know, because everything was going mechanical, and then suddenly everything's digital. It's I find it peculiar.
Yeah, man. And
I think at the end of the day, though, the technocrats, I mean, it's their motive is no secret. It's control. It's power. Control over the world and its resources. Domination. World domination. Where have we heard that before?
We know that secret societies and magical orders always coincide with these elite factions. If you look deep enough, you will always run into that. Especially, you know, Freemasonry is one of the most prevalent ones. And I know you've done a lot of looking into the symbolism of Freemasonry, especially when it comes to Washington, D.C. and other places, because our founding fathers were, of course, Masons. And there's a lot of arguments. I have a lot of friends that are high-level Masons. I know a lot of different people that argue back and forth whether Freemasonry at its root is something nefarious, or if it's just like a tool like any other kind of magical order where you can use it for bad purposes. Maybe it's been hijacked by nefarious individuals and it has been used for nefarious purposes. Maybe at its root it's not necessarily bad or good. What do you think about that?
I think that's exactly it. It's a tool. It's a tool, nothing more. I mean, it's like the Georgia Guidestones. A lot of people can call it bad. A lot of people can call it good. But really, it's just a rock, just a piece of stone. It's not. It's like a gun. Guns can be used for good. Guns can be used for bad. But at the end of the day, the good and evil doesn't reside in the gun. It doesn't reside in the stone. It doesn't reside in the Freemasonry. It resides in the heart of he who wields it. So Freemasonry itself, it can be a good thing, can be a bad thing. That's my opinion. That's my take. And I have, you know, looked at it in depth. At the end of the day, you can't blame the world's problems on things. You need to blame the world's problems on people. There are people behind all of this, and these people have addresses. They have names. They need to be. They're all too good at the old focus on this hand, not this hand. You know, focus on the thing we want you to focus on, not the thing we don't. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. And you need to start paying attention to the man behind the curtain, not the curtain itself, not the illusion of the image of Oz before us.
Do you think the machine is too large to fail? Do you think that they have too many years of control and this too large of a network to kind of fail right now? Or do you think that they are indeed crumbling very slowly and losing control because of the amount of information going around right now and amount of people seeing through it? I'd just like to get your thoughts on, do you think we have a chance to maybe overthrow this tyranny sometime in our lifetime?
I think we do. And I think there's two essential components to doing it. Yes, I do believe that they are kind of in panic mode right now. I think they realize that whole internet thing was a mistake. because it opened up a lot of people's eyes, but they're cracking down on that and they're trying, but they're doing so in panic mode. And that's why we see them getting so sloppy. And there's two things that we can do to counter this. And it will, if we do that effectively, we will be effective and they will crumble. Number one, civil disobedience. We don't have to listen to these people. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute. But the number two thing is simply ask these questions. We need to start asking these questions. What about the second video after Georgia Guidestone? What about any possible third videos? We need to start asking these questions. How do you call it an insurrection when the police were literally, and there's video of police literally opening the gates? We need to start asking questions. That's the first thing, because when you start asking questions and you start cornering them with these questions, the scheme is exposed. But the other thing is civil disobedience. And here's a simple thing for you to ponder. Where did our government get its power from? The reality is our nation was founded by a very small group of relatively well-known war criminals. Emphasis on criminals. They were war criminals who took it upon themselves to give themselves power, which they didn't have to give to themselves. This is how this nation was founded. And these are the people running the show because we're letting them, because we believe this garbage.
Yes.
And it's garbage. At the end of the day, our nation was founded by a small group of criminals who took it upon themselves to give themselves power, which they did not have. Now, if I don't have a Corvette, I certainly can't give another person a Corvette, can I?
Right.
Absolutely not. So if I don't have power over my neighbor, how can I delegate power over my neighbor to another person or entity? I can't. But they do. How? Magic. They made a magic little piece of paper that says, this is how it's going to be. It's a fraud. These people are frauds, nothing more, nothing less. We don't have to listen to them. The key to defeating them is civil disobedience, because we're not obligated. Nowhere in the Constitution does it grant the government authority over any individuals. In fact, their authority is derived simply, and this is why they have to take an oath of office. They have to swear an allegiance. This is why they taught you to pledge allegiance in class, is to swear your allegiance. It's only by your consent. You know, the nation is to rule by the consent of the governed, we say. But where's the evidence of consent? When did any of us ever consent? When were we even consulted on the matter? We weren't. It's a fraud. They have no authority. So key number one is civil disobedience. Quit listening to them. And quit listening to them in numbers. If we do it individually, we're all going to fall. But if we stand together, they're going to crumble. And, you know, answer number two is simply ask questions. We need to start asking, government, where did you get your authority over me? How did you get your authority? How did you get control of this land you stole? Who made you God?
All right.
Where does your authority come from? How are we a nation that's ruled by the consent of the governed when I was never consulted? Is there any evidence of, where's the evidence of my consent? We need to start asking these questions boldly. We need to start pointing at the big elephant in the room, because that elephant is going to crush us if we don't.
100%, man. And the only thing keeping us from doing that on a large scale is the illusion of consequence and legal, if it's illegal or not. And most of it is an illusion anyway. Look at most of the stuff that happened with, you know, COVID and masking up and fines if you don't do this. How many people actually, you know, they got a ticket and they didn't pay and they didn't hear anything else ever again, because it's all an illusion. Everything that they're putting in front of you, all the laws that they've made for themselves, it's all a choice for you to make, really. Nothing is really mandatory here.
Essentially, it's no different than a man breaking in your house and saying, guess what? It's not your house anymore. It's my house. I'm in charge of things. And I put everything on a magic piece of paper, so therefore it's legitimate. See?
Yeah.
And if you don't like that, well, I'm going to use all the money I stole from you to buy a gun and shove it down your throat. If you have, that's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
That's our nation. It's ruled by criminals who've been criminals from the start, and they haven't really even hidden it. They just call it, they don't even call it what it was. It was, ironically enough, it was an insurrection that this country, that founded this country, was an insurrection, ironically enough.
Yeah.
That's how this country was founded. But they don't call it that. They're the founding fathers, and it was a revolution. It was, you know, they George Carlin put it best. They use soft words. They use soft language to make it sound, you know, nice and pretty. And in reality, you know, it's funny. You go to Washington, D.C., and they have this statue of Christopher Columbus. They're honoring, and we have Columbus Day, and we honor Christopher Columbus. Why? Why do we honor Christopher Columbus? Well, because he discovered America, right? Well, how do you discover? This is why we need to ask questions. How do you discover a continent that's inhabited by natives? How do you do it? Well, you do it by putting a big Templar cross on your boat and writing it in the history books, and therefore magic.
Right.
That's how you do it.
100%. Now, I want to get into one of the attempts that they've made over and over again, and I think this is one of the strongest parts of our Constitution, is our right to bear arms. They have not yet been able to disarm us. They have in other countries, and other countries are a lot worse off than us right now, and I think this is one of the things that is kind of keeping us afloat on a grand scale and keeping us from falling into complete tyranny at this time is our right to bear arms still.
I think you're wrong. I don't think that's one of the things keeping us. I think that's the only thing that's keeping us.
Right. Well, yeah.
So we better stick to it and let them pry them from our cold, 100%. Dead fingers, you know? And
yeah,
that's the only thing. I mean, you said it yourself. There's a lot of countries that are less fortunate than us that don't have that. And look at what's happening. Look at, and that's the one thing that makes us unique. That's the one thing that secures our liberties, and we need to capitalize on it. And there's a reason they haven't been able to take them away, because it's not easy to disarm a person who doesn't want to be disarmed. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have those rights. Even the criminals that founded this country couldn't deny that, because that's how they got their freedom. That's how the war criminals got their freedom, through what? An insurrection. How can you have an insurrection if they disarm us?
Yeah.
So,
well, you know,
I think that's what makes an insurrection is being armed. So that, again, I think I'm still flabbergasted that they can call January 6th an insurrection, because there were nobody was armed.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
I think that's what really sets it apart and defines it as an insurrection. Imagine if the forefathers, the founding fathers, imagine them pulling off what they did without weapons. Exactly. Wouldn't happen.
Yeah, man. I think that a lot of what we're seeing right now is so illusionary, and we just need to break that. But I think the magic spell is being broken on some levels. But the question is, like you said, is it too late on some levels as well to kind of take back what we need to when we do? I think that eventually it's all gonna just crumble anyway, because it's not sustainable to begin with. Whatever they have set up will eventually just come crumbling down. We see the monetary system crumbling down, the economy, probably levels of society soon. So on some level, it all has to come down. The question is, are we going to rebuild? And I think we've already started. I think a lot of people have already started their own communities, their own farms, starting their own entertainment and things of this nature. I think that's what we need more of, so that we'll have something ready for when it does crumble. What do you think about that?
I don't think it's going to come down so easy. I don't think it's going to come down by itself at all. I think certain things may crumble, but they're going to position. They're planning on that too, and they're positioning their pieces so that when it crumbles, they have a new thing to put in its place. Mm-hmm. It's been this way since the dawn of recorded history, and I don't think that's going to change unless we do something about it. I don't think it's going to happen naturally. I think the system we have will crumble into a new system of theirs unless we do something about it. I don't think it's just going to crumble by itself and then we're going to be free. I don't think that's the answer. I think it's going to require action on our part.
Well, let's talk about Let's talk about the answer for the last few minutes that we have. You mentioned civil disobedience, and I think some people might get the wrong idea about this, but I know exactly what you mean, and I think that a lot of us have already been practicing this for a long time, and it's just basically it's non-participation with the bullshit, you know?
Exactly. But I think that there's two parts to the answer. I think there's an even more important part, which really helps their system fall apart, is asking questions. Asking the questions that point to the elephant in the room. That's the most important part. I think civil disobedience is equally as important, but by itself, it's going to be not as effective as if we start asking the questions that need to be asked, and there's a lot of them. I could write a list a mile long of questions we need to ask. I think I've presented quite a few good questions that need to be asked here in the last hour, and I think that's a good starting point. But it's only a starting point. There's so many questions we need to start asking, and we really, really need to start thinking critically about where we're going as a society, because too many people put their faith in the government to fix the problems. They're not going to. Too many people put their faith in the returning of Christ, which, by all means, if that's what you want to do, all right, but you're only dooming us, because it's been 2,000 years. We can't sit around and wait on Christ. What if Christ is sitting around waiting on us?
Yeah.
So, God helps those who help himself. So let's not rely on Christ to fix our problems. Let's not rely on government to fix our problems. Let's start fixing our own problems.
I love it, man. Very well said. Where can the audience find your book? Anything else you've got out there?
My book's called The Vitruvian Code, The Secret Anatomy of Washington, D.C., and its Connections to the Ancient Mysteries. You can find it on Amazon. Just look for The Vitruvian Code. It's named after Da Vinci's drawing, The Vitruvian Man. So just type in The Vitruvian Code. I'm sure it'll pop up. You can find me on social media right now. I'm I'm on Facebook. I'm on Gab.
How is Gab? I've heard some mixed things about Gab. How is it?
I like it. It's a good design. It's a good idea. It's a good concept. But I don't think there's enough people using it.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe they got the right idea with the free speech platform. I think too many people are stuck on old habits like Facebook, though.
Yes.
And I've tried to get more people to come in. If we'd all just abandon Facebook for Gab, I think we'd be in a much better place. But
Facebook, YouTube, all the big platforms. I mean, I'm on all the alternative platforms. I've been trying and trying, but people don't want to put a new web address in their damn browser for some reason.
Well, you think about it, man. How much time have we all invested in Facebook and this? We didn't know what we were getting into. We didn't realize what it truly was. But you invest so much time. You try and build up an audience. Even YouTube. You spend all these years trying to build up this audience. And then you come to realize that it's a rigged game and this is not working. But there's a couple of options out there in order to capitalize on these other options, I have to start over from scratch and build this thing up again. And it's like, it's disheartening, man. I mean, and that's kind of where I've been at. As I said, when this whole thing started with the Guidestones, I was on a hiatus from even Facebook. And I recommend a lot of people do that. I recommend everybody just leave it behind. But until everybody does, it seems like everybody's waiting on everyone else to do it.
Yeah, man, I see the same thing.
If we do that, we're never going to get there. So
yeah.
I've been on a hiatus from pretty much all social media. I was planning on taking the whole summer off, but then the Georgia Guidestones happened, and it was just too big of an opportunity. I had to jump in just because I believe, and I personally believe by leading an example, I believe we start asking these questions, and that's how we're going to expose them and get the answers we want. So I think it's important. We need to start asking, where's the other angle of the video? Why didn't that get released? And why did it take, we ask why did it take so long to release the video in the first place? And then why did it take so long to release the video of the guy planting it? And I think the answer is really because they wanted to go back and do their homework and make sure they didn't leave anything, make sure they edited or make sure there's no evidence in there. Whatever the reason is. So, and in fact, one thing I wanted to touch upon when I was on the Guidestones, but I forgot, but I think it's relevant is, I talk about, how it's not a victory, it's just destruction of evidence. And not only is it evidence of a crime scene in the form of the vandalism of the Guidestones, but consider this, you know, when I actually went to the Guidestones, it was right after stories started to emerge about a mysterious stain on top of the Guidestone. And there, you know, a lot of speculation that it's perhaps a blood stain from rituals. So not only could it be evidence of a vandalism crime scene, but what other crimes could have occurred there? I mean, could there be sacrifices there? Who knows? Is that why they had to destroy it and get rid of the evidence real quick? You know, within hours of its destruction. You know, these are questions we need to start asking.
Yeah, man,
I mean, more importantly, we need to ask the questions that have definitive answers that we already know the answer to. Like, for example, where did the government get its authority? And of course, we know where it got its authority. It gave it to itself. Where did the government get this land? We know where it got it. It stole it from the natives. We need to start asking these questions, most of all, the ones we know the answer to, because that's how we expose it.
100%, man. This was fantastic. Robert, keep asking those questions and pumping out the information. We're definitely going to have to do this soon in the future again.
Yeah, definitely. Appreciate it. It's been a good chat.
Yes, sir. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will talk again tomorrow. See y'all then.